you're listening to Critical In, episode number 23.
The episode that keeps getting sorted into Hufflepuff. Come on, Sorting Hat!
Returned in this one. I like that.
Did it?
Yeah. What? They showed him carrying it down an aisle or something. Yeah. And then they're like, there goes that Sorting Hat. Back to his sortingness.
That's when she started glossing over some things in the books, too, because I think that same thing happens in the book. It wasn't just a cut for the movie, where like Ron was like, okay. Yeah, Sorting Hat was here a second ago. I forget what he said.
I kind of hate to hear that about the book, but I seem like the book has plenty of, you know, it needs its time to do other stuff.
Yeah, that's when he's paralyzed on the train, other things.
But I also, you know what I also liked a lot about this one?
Tell me.
Return to Quidditch.
Yeah,
They're like, here's a Quidditch match. I was like, Quidditch? What's that? Isn't that from Harry Potter? Oh, this is a Harry Potter movie! Yeah, I'm so excited about that.
You know, there's a lot. Of course, there's a lot more Quidditch in the book, as you might suspect.
Yeah.
But Quidditch plays into the plot more in the book, and here it's almost like, you know, if they weren't going to use it in the plot, they could have just cut it, even though I like seeing the Quidditch. I'm a sucker for Quidditch, although I like no real human sports.
Didn't you actually buy a Quidditch video game so you could play it at home in the safety and comfort of a closed room where no one could see you?
I'm not willing to comment on that, Logan. That's not just a thing that...
Just exposing your true nature.
Look, EA Sports makes great video games, so of course they made a great Quidditch game. It's not surprising, all right?
Wait, EA Sports, don't they make, like, Madden's 2000...
I believe they
the people
do.
Who made the Madden's 2006, 2007, and 2009 football? I don't think they involved 2008.
Uh-huh. You've got the right guys, Logan. And let me tell you, their Quidditch skills are just as good as their footballery.
Well, if you can't tell by our talk of Quidditch and sorting hats
and whatnot, this week... Pubescent love.
That's right. This week we are discussing Twilight.
Yes.
We set through the first film. Second film's coming up. Hey, we were discussing Harry Potter. Ryan, do you know... Okay, here's what... I always thought that... just based on the people I've talked to, Harry Potter and Twilight have become the new Star Wars, Star Trek. I feel like fans argue about those two, and they just hate each other.
Okay, I feel like I'm deluded, but I don't feel like Twilight is as big as Harry Potter or Star Wars or Star Trek, but I think it's just because I'm not into it. Like, I don't
see it. No, it's just because I hang out with a lot of underage girls, right?
Well, I know that about you.
And I shop exclusively at Hot Topic. However, during Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, which we saw this week, I saw the new teaser for New Moon, I believe is the upcoming Twilight film.
Sure.
The second one, or they've actually renamed the whole thing. The first one's just Twilight, but now it's Twilight Saga: New Moon.
Wait, like, are they going to Lucasize the first one and rename that to Twilight?
They'll probably, they need to Lucasize that one, as far as I've heard, because it was low budget and badly done.
Add some banthas in there.
Yeah. Anyway, during that trailer, during the teaser, people actually cheered in the theater, and I was like, "Don't you people hate Twilight because you're seeing Harry Potter?"
Logan, I like Star Wars and Star Trek, and by that I mean a little bit of the first series of Star Wars and only some of Star Trek.
But Ryan, which do you like more?
I think I like Star Trek more because George Lucas isn't involved.
You proved me wrong already because you had to think about it. I just figured you'd have an instant answer. You're like, Star Trek for sure because I love speaking Klingons.
Oh, what?
Klingonese.
Doesn't sound like
what a Klingon
I'd
speak?
Say. Klingonian.
Oh my goodness. This is why I like Star Wars, because all I have to remember is Tatooine. And
that's the only planet.
And R2-D2.
Uh-huh.
But yes. I have sat through all six Star Wars movies, and I haven't seen a single Star Trek movie besides the new one. Yeah, that was my reaction, too. I was like, this is so bad. This is absolutely terrible. This cannot get worse. Oh, boy, episode 4.
But yeah, it gets better, which is good, if you watch it in chronological order instead of release date. Anyway, enough about Star Wars, because we're talking about everybody's favorite...
Boy
Quidditch
Wizard.
Cedric
I say Boy Wizard, and you're like Quidditch player.
We talk about the guy from Twilight who was in Goblet of Fire as
that's
Cedric
where,
Diggory,
yeah.
And we're gonna make it. I'm bringing it back around.
Oh, okay. I'll wait for it then.
It's here.
This is, oh, okay, I thought it'd be a long trip this
well,
time.
Well, you know, sometimes.
It's, you know, because of Robert Pattinson, I think is his name, it's really easy now to connect Harry Potter and Twilight right away.
So if you're doing 6 degrees of separation with children's fantasy,
that's the way to do it. That's a really specific way to play 6 degrees of separation. Mm-hmm. Let's play 6 degrees of separation, but only children's fantasy movies.
Well,
I call Golden Compass. Here we go.
The guy in Neverending Story who did the voice of the rock monster. Was...
Oh, man. Right. That beaver from Lion, Witch, and Wardrobe. Okay, we'll get to Half-Blood Prince in a second.
Okay.
But we have a lot to say about Harry Potter in general, the movies. Generally, I feel like this is not a great series of films. It's a series that's entirely watchable, but it doesn't really match up. I think they're great films individually, but all together, it doesn't hold to me. It doesn't congeal, Ryan.
Mm-hmm. Well, as a series, I would agree with you. I think
they don't match up at all.
The individual movies tend to be watchable, mm-hmm. If not good.
I think there's one that's not.
There's one that is not watchable, yes.
Yes.
However, you know, I don't want to be Dr. Super Nerd here, but... You know, they do
got a doctorate in nerdery.
Well, I'm a PhD. They don't always live up to the quality of the books, but they are in general watchable, and I do have my problems with them though.
Okay,
yes, as a series, I agree completely with you because every director has a different take, and they're hard to watch side by side and not realize how incredibly different they are.
Yes, now, Ryan, I have a lot of dumb friends. I'll just say it, okay? Mm-hmm. Let's see if you're one of them, okay?
No,
you realize, right, that they can't fit the entire book into each movie, okay?
Yes, of course.
Okay.
It's an adaptation. It's not the exact same thing.
Exactly. You're watching a movie. You're not reading the book. Okay. So with that in mind, you think these should be able to work as a movie standalone? You should be able to watch this and know exactly what's going on. You shouldn't have to have any prior knowledge of the book.
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you. That makes you one of my smart friends,
right? Oh.
And I will hold on to you for another month or so.
Stop. Please let go of me, just for now.
Just a tightrope, what can I say?
However,
Harry Potter...
You were quoting me a statistic, though, just to be fair to the movies.
Okay.
You were quoting me a statistic before we started recording that, like, one in eight people has read
I read recently that one in eight Americans has read Harry Potter, at least one of the books. And the way, according to all my friends, if you read one, it's like potato chip books. Like it's like reading crack, Ryan. You can't stop there.
Yes,
you got to keep going.
Read crack before you choose to take it.
So that being said, I said of these like one in eight people, probably one in seven of those has read the rest of them. I don't know.
Sure.
Does that even make sense?
No.
Statistically, I don't think so.
I doubt that.
But yeah, so it's really hard to pretty much you can walk up to anybody on the street in America. Why would you want to go anywhere else? What a great country.
Right.
And talk to someone who's read a Harry Potter book.
Right, and because everyone's read the books, you know, there's an argument there, not one that I necessarily agree with, that why would the movies have to be understandable if everybody who sees them's already read the books?
Yes.
But I still say, what's the point of making a movie in that case?
Well, yeah, exactly. I won't take part in that argument, because having not read the books... I try to. This is like once again going back to Watchmen. This is Ryan will come at it with the movie. I've read the book review, and I'll come at it as like just as a movie. Here's how it works, or if it doesn't work.
Right.
So with that in mind, let's start from the beginning, and we'll get around to Half-Blood Prince a little later in the show. So stick around. Mm-hmm. Ryan, it all started with a little Daniel Radcliffe and whatever the hell the other guys' names are, and Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. Now, was the movie also renamed Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone in England?
Yes, well,
it's renamed
the Sorcerer's Stone for America.
I'm sorry, yeah, okay, right. Did it have its original title as a movie as
well? Oh, yes, and they shot...
Don't they actually say Sorcerer's Stone?
Right, reshot those scenes.
Okay, interesting.
Philosophers for the American, for the UK version. I mean, they reshot for Sorcerer's for the...
Because I wouldn't understand the movie's about if they said Philosopher.
That was one of those things where, from what I understand, it was the first book, and when they sold it... You know, they asked her to make that change. She was like, well, okay. And then, of course, as the book became incredibly popular, she stopped making those kinds of changes and just did what she wanted to do. But, yeah, they do have do different versions. And, you know, I think this is Chris Columbus, of course, who we all love from, like, Adventures in Babysitting and the good old days.
Oh, yes. Writer of Gremlins.
Writer of Gremlins. Although, I was talking to a friend. Now, here's the thing. I happen to have enjoyed the first movie. And a lot of people hated it. And especially people who enjoyed the books. And... a friend of mine was like, Chris Columbus, what a hack. And I was like, what are you talking about, Chris Columbus?
Ryan, Home Alone, Ryan.
Well, you know, but he directed Adventures in Babysitting, he wrote Gremlins, and he was like, okay, and I gotta admit, Logan, I can't think of anything else that he did that was incredible.
Home Alone.
Home Alone's not incredible.
What are you talking about, man?
Home Alone's, you know, okay.
Home Alone is one of my favorite Christmas movies. I think I gave the original Home Alone an 8 or a 7.
All right.
I can't remember. Hold on. I'm actually IMDb-ing Chris Columbus right now. What a nice-looking fella. I take
him. Go ahead. I mean, prove me wrong. I want to hear about it. Okay.
I like to point out he's still making movies. Weird stuff at that. We had Rent recently. This is what he left Harry Potter do Rent.
Which I did hear was terrible.
I would agree. Well, you know, to me, Rent was never good to begin with.
Okay.
He just recently directed I Love You, Beth Cooper.
Okay, was that any good? Did you see that?
No, I haven't seen it. I read the novel. The novel is rather funny. The story, the plot in the novel is almost non-existent. But as far as jokes go, if you want just a good book full of jokes, read I Love You, Beth Cooper.
Yeah.
There was a trailer for his new movie, which I don't know if it's based on a book, but he's trying to make it already out to be a series. It's called Percy Jackson and the Olympians, Lightning Thief.
That was the movie where my brain couldn't figure out the title, and it was like it flashed only for a moment, and I was like, wait, what Percy Olympian Thief Head?
Yes. Well, okay. So as far as him directing stuff goes, Ryan, he started his career with Adventures in Babysitting, okay. He directed Home Alone in 1990.
Uh-huh.
You can't top that, okay? Home Alone 2, you know, we'll dismiss it. Hey, Tim Curry, you know.
Yeah.
He has, I think Mrs. Doubtfire is very fondly remembered by a lot of people.
Okay. I like Mrs. Doubtfire.
But then it kind of goes like a roller coaster from there on.
Uh-huh.
Because we had 9 months, Hugh Grant, right?
Uh-huh.
Stepmom, Bicentennial Man, then he's like, oh, Harry Potter.
Right.
And so he had Harry Potter after that. As far as writing goes, okay, this is not only Gremlins, okay, but he owned the 80s with Gremlins and the Goonies.
Okay.
A lot of people tend to forget that he was one of the writers on the Goonies.
I didn't know that, actually.
And then from there on, it's about dead. He also, later on in life, wrote Christmas with the Cranks, because as you know, him and John Hughes have always been sort of like in competition for holiday movies.
Uh-huh.
But yes, there you go.
You gotta be fair. It's not a strong resume.
No. As with 1492 Productions, because his name's Chris Columbus.
Oh, I get it.
He also brought Fantastic Four. The First Night at the Museum. Monkey Bone, oddly enough. And Jingle All the Way. He's kind of all over the map here. It seems he has kind of a small catalog of films, so it seems like he really does only the stuff he's interested in. I would stand by him only for Gremlins, to be honest with you.
Well, but Gremlins was changed a lot by Dante, you know that.
Yeah, I was about to say, that's more of a Joe Dante thing.
Yeah.
But the fact that Gremlins exist, I'll kiss Chris Columbus once for.
All right. So what we're saying here is, Chris Columbus, you know, not necessarily the strongest resume,
but
I really enjoyed Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. Now,
yeah, your friend, I don't think, has an argument there, Ryan, is what I'm getting.
Well, no,
but go ahead.
I think he does, is my point. But in spite of that...
Yeah, he can't say, what else has he done that's good to argue
Sorcerer's
Stone
that's
is
true.
Bad?
Yeah,
okay.
That's true. But anyway, I liked it. Now, to be fair, I didn't read the books until I'd already seen the first two movies. At that point, after I saw the second one, I was like, yeah, I should read these books. Seems pretty good. So for people, I don't come from the perspective of comparing either of the first two books to the movies, because I'd seen the movies first, and so they shaped my perception. But beyond that, yeah, I was like, that's a pretty fun, adventurous kids film. And nice. I came out of it, you know, with, you know, my family, most of which who'd already read the first book, and I was like, yeah, it's a pretty fun kids film. Like, I wasn't, you know, obsessed with it or anything, and I wasn't thinking it was the best thing in the world. But my sister was like, listen, if you liked it, the book is 10 times better. Mm-hmm. And I read eventually read the book, and like, they were like Pringles. I read the first book, and then I came back to my sister and was like, I'd like to borrow the rest of these books.
Yeah.
And I read all the way up through the fourth one, I believe, which is how many were at the time. But so it convinced me to see to read the books, and for that I will definitely always hold a fondness. But it's a fun kids film. I think it was well put together. I think you know, all the kid actors are surprisingly good. I think Richard Harris is Dumbledore. We'll get to that in a second. And ultimately, I didn't have too many complaints.
I pretty much agree with everything you said there. I think if you want to speak at worlds to Columbus as a director, you can look at something like Home Alone. He brings out the best in kid actors.
Mm-hmm.
That might be one of the reasons why he was so heavily involved here with early on in the Harry Potter series. Everyone's really good in the film. Like, the casting, I think, is perfect. The look of the film is great, and it's the first two to me are the only Harry Potter films that have a sense of adventure to them at all.
Adventure, yeah, I probably agree with that. Yeah,
and I don't know. Harry Potter later gets bogged down to me with hormones and that sort of thing, but that's apparently where the books were going. So I guess I can't argue that so much. Just looking at them as movies, I really liked Sorcerer's Stone. I understood everything that was happening in it. It made perfect sense to me. I gave the Sorcerer's Stone a 7.
Mm-hmm. I gave it an 8. And I, again, saw it a while ago, so whatever. But my rating
and
was
I still, the first two films are on, I still like watching whenever they're on TV, actually. I'll stop and pay attention to them. Mm-hmm. They're very good movies, yeah. And there's some cute kids in those movies, too. What can I say?
You got to admit it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there are funny moments. Yeah, it's a bit schmaltzy. It's a bit childish, but, you know, I couldn't really fault it. That's sort of what the first books were. I mean, the first books were not dark, so, you know.
And I think it's a really... Chris Columbus also brought, like, this great, like, it makes you want to see more of these movies, I think.
Yeah.
He kind of, I don't know, he does a great job presenting this world for the first time, which later directors would go on to change completely or just add whatever they wanted to.
Right. Now, I will say I'm glad he didn't continue on because I don't think his style would have worked for the later movies.
Yes, but I think I don't know. I wish it had been more subtle, but we'll get to that. Right. Okay, so Chamber of Secrets, quickly, what do you got?
Chamber of Secrets, Chris Columbus, I feel the same way about it, although I think it was less interesting, and it also, the second book is a bit less interesting than the first, because the way J.K. Rowling seems to write these is she'll fill, like, a whole book with stuff that'll be important later, rather than, you know, I mean, she also weaves it into the more action-centric books, but there's less of a plot in the second one, is what I'm saying, and so a bit less interesting, although I still really enjoyed the film, so I gave this one an 8 as well.
Okay, I gave this one a 7 as well, actually. Mm-hmm. Once again, I have to say this, because it's going to pay off in a minute or two. Everything made perfect sense, I knew what the plot was, we got to the whole Tom Riddle thing, it was interesting to see how that played out, mm-hmm. and it's kind of shocking, and I felt like we were actually finally getting around to... Voldemort, I think his name is.
Yes.
Like, the overall bad guy. It was cool. And I also think Kenneth Branagh, I'd say, did a great job as well.
Yeah. He's really funny.
I have to also say that he took it, like, he did really well making it slightly darker. Mm. And so I was kind of, like, looking to that. I was like, okay, so, you know, he's going to take his baby steps through this, and, you know, we're going to kind of grow up with the kids. But it didn't quite work that way. Having Buffs of the Raid now, we'll lead into Prisoner of Azkaban. Mm-hmm. Which suddenly all these kids, banking?
Azkaban.
Azkaban. The kids are suddenly 5 years older somehow. Mm-hmm. No one turns on a light anytime in the movie. Mm-hmm. Hogwarts, I almost called it Hogwarts. Hogwarts gains gigantic bridges.
A lot about the geography.
Hagrid's house is moved.
Uh-huh.
There's gigantic hills and everything now. Okay, so what do you have to say about Prisoner of Azkaban?
Well,
Azkaban.
Well, you know, I didn't have a lot of problems with... now, at this point, when Prisoner of Azkaban came out, I'd read all the books up to that point that were out. Mm-hmm. And so now I was ready to judge it compared to the
book. You had a working knowledge.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You went in there. You knew what the plot was.
Right. And whether I want to or not, of course, I'm going to compare it to the book.
Yes.
So I went in there and I saw the style. I was like, all right, well, the third book gets dark, so the fact that it's dark is appropriate. Now it's a little over too dark. It's a little, you know, a little too obviously dark. Now you could say that the first two were a little bit too far on the light side too, but this was it was dark to the point of being sort of brooding and silly. But okay, I forgive that. I think it's sort of appropriate. I liked the way that he handled the Gary Oldman character Sirius. I thought everything was kind of moving along fairly nicely. But then I was like, you know, they're leaving a lot out that's going to be important. Like, to me, the third book is very much about Harry discovering a lot about his father. And all the people who his father hung out with when he was at school and how they now relate to the world around him now. And that's Lupin, and that's, what's his name? Wormtail, yeah. And, that stuff was really downplayed. There was, like, a very brief, like, and I know your father, anyway. And it totally robbed me of the impact that all that stuff had on me in the books when I read it. And so I thought that was really mishandled, and there was a lot of stuff cut. And yet, Alfonso Cuarón, I believe, who directed that,
yes,
put a lot of goofy stuff in, like a lot of like sort of like random scenes around the castle of just funny little things happening. You know, that changing of the seasons thing he did with the tree, just stuff that seemed useless when we could have been using that time in more important stuff. And final thing, this was the introduction of Michael Gambone as Dumbledore. I like Michael Gambone as an actor a lot. He is terrible as Dumbledore.
I will once again have to. I should stop letting you lead off because I once again agree with everything you're saying, Ryan. What's your rating before I get to mine, really quick?
Well, because I enjoyed the overall style and because I had already read the books and was able to, I knew where they were going, and I just thought they sort of. My outrage was a little bit on part of people who hadn't read the books and not myself. I still gave this one a 7. I thought that the acting. This was when the child actors stepped up. I really liked that. They started sort of like playing it up, despite the "he was their friends" moment, you know.
Oh, you see, you're covering all my stuff again.
Despite that, I gave it a 7. Go on.
Okay. This will be the first time we pseudo disagree. This isn't a big difference in rating, but it's pseudo. It kind of is. Quickly, yeah, I think it's. I think it's not a problem being so dark. I think the problem is it's too stylish. Mm-hmm. He tries to put too much of himself in the movie, and because of that, not only am I distracted from the plot, which is missing a whole bunch of stuff that would have made the movie make sense, in my opinion.
And you haven't read the books, and you can...
No,
you
exactly.
Can,
I left the theater with so many questions about what had happened in that movie. I felt there were gigantic plot holes, the likes of which we wouldn't see again until Goblet of Fire, coming up soon. The acting had suddenly gotten terrible. I'd read afterwards that was the first time they actually took acting lessons, too, before that movie. Mm-hmm. He actually had the three main stars take acting lessons. It did not pay off at all, because if anything, they overact their way through the movie. Ratcliffe's bad crying, which you said is terrible. Mm-hmm. He cut stuff out that I need to know, while at the same time adding stuff that's completely silly, just for style. There's most of the time there's not even dialogue, it's just something goofy happening with the Whomping Trees, what it was, even?
The Whomping Willow, yeah.
Okay, let's see. And it also ends on one of the worst, like, final things ever in a movie. You know, at that point, I was... There's two things I was kind of getting tired of in the Harry Potter movies, okay? I was tired of, like, knowing that the dark arts teacher is always going to be evil or somehow, like, involved in the story. Uh-huh. Which would not go away for a while, I discovered. And I also was getting kind of tired of, at the end of every movie, them looking off in the distance and being like, things will be better next year.
Well, worse.
And this one, or worse, yeah. It's like something big always happens, and they always kind of get together at the end, like, well, at least we have each other. Mm-hmm. Which I expected that with the first two, because those are kid films, and the third one, he gets away from that, but he does the dumbest thing possible. He's like, I'll just have him fly off in the sky with the terrible, like, blurred freeze frame.
Yeah, the goofy 80s freeze frame. Like, well, I like magic!
And it's awesome. So, that being said, we went from 2 7s with the first two to 5 instantly in my book. Everyone I've talked to, these underage teenage girls, who love Harry Potter, say the third one is actually their favorite film of the entire series so far. Mm-hmm. That's including Half-Blood Prince. But at that point, I thought it was the worst one, and so I gave it a 5. I'm not trying to spend too much time on these the early films here. Goblet of Fire, Ryan.
Goblet of Fire. Well, first of all, I'll ask: did you agree that Michael Gambon wasn't that great as Dumbledore?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, like I said, I agreed pretty much everything you said there. He's way too mean in that movie.
Yeah.
And he's way too snappy as well. The whole thing with the whatever the time thing was that Hermione
had.
The
time turner. Yeah.
Like Dumbledore's in on that, but he's like, "Oh, I don't know anything about it," and kind of like leaves the room. I'm like, "Oh, Dumbledore, just be like lovable again."
Yeah.
Which he's never going back to that. At this point, I just kind of accept it in the movies.
He was the thing is that line, which is from the book, is so. Mm-hmm. Quintessential Dumbledore, and he really screwed it up because the whole point is like, oh, well, I'm going to slyly give you permission to break the rules, you know?
Well, if it means anything, he should be someone who's read the book, he should be their enemy because Michael Gambon's actually said that the famous quote is like, why would I need to read the books when I can read the script?
Yeah.
Or something like that. I'm like, okay, so maybe you're reading the scripts of deleted scenes I didn't see that made them make sense.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, his whole thing is like, well, I play him mean because headmasters are mean, right? Am I right? It's like, pay attention.
What school did you go to?
The thing is, Harry has such this fatherly relationship with Dumbledore that now in the later movies makes no sense because why would you like Dumbledore? He seems like a jackass.
See, this is why, Goblet of Fire really proves our point, Ryan. When he actually beats Harry Potter up for the most part.
It's true.
Like, Harry Potter comes in, he's like, something important just happened in my life. He's like, let me slam you against a wall, Harry Potter.
Did you put your name in that cup?
Discuss it. Yeah, right to this glass case or whatever.
Yeah. So, Goblet of Fire is a slideshow of the book 4's greatest hits. It is absent of a plot. It makes no sense if you haven't read the books. And if you have read the books, it's maddening what they left out and what they chose to spend time on. It really just feels like you're watching a montage based on the book rather than an actual story.
Goblet of Fire was the first one. I had to throw this in there just quickly. That I intended a midnight screening of the night it opened with you.
Oh, yeah.
With another person. And I just remember everyone...
another person.
We wore Steve clothes. I just remember, like, you know, both of you guys had read the book, obviously, and you were really excited about this. And I remember, like, you guys freeze framing the trailer and picking things out and everything. Yeah. While I was just like, another Harry Potter movie, and, you know, it probably has to be better than that last one. I think this was another new director as well. Mm-hmm. And I just remember everyone kind of left disappointed. You guys were just kind of disappointed. But I was like, okay, can someone explain what the hell just happened in that movie? Because it really is, I feel like 2 hours of nothing. And then at the very, like, end, they're just like, oh, here's what you need to know for the next film.
Yeah, that's what it was.
They toss everything in the very end of the movie. And by that point, I didn't care. And I've actually, you know, I said, like, I'll, you know, watch the first two if I see them on TV or whatever. But Goblet of Fire was actually on the other night, and I changed the channel. I was still like, okay, I don't want to watch them fight a stupid dragon again.
The only thing they spent time on was the ball. Of all the wacky things to pick out to be important.
That was my other thing. This is the first one that introduced hormones. Mm-hmm. Which apparently had them grow, like, amazing length hair.
Which
they spend plenty of, like, time shaking around the movie. But, like, okay, ladies, I'm sorry, but Hermione's pretty much, like, PMS in this entire film. And it's like, okay, now we're going to stop the movie. We hired a couple guys from Radiohead to come in the movie here and entertain the ball by going, yeah! And so they cut to them dancing, and then, like, they have the after the ball bit, and Hermione's like, I hate everyone in this room. And I'm like, oh yeah, Hermione's in this movie as well. And so I was kind of excited, but no. It's pretty much a really bad movie, in my opinion. And I gave Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire a 4.
I gave it a 5.
Ryan, it's like a roadblock on the way to, like, through the Harry Potter series. I'll have, when I go to rewatch all these to see how much they make sense in the very end, like, that's the one I'll dread the most.
It is, and a lot of people say Goblet of Fire is their least favorite book. It's not the strongest one, but it's not my least favorite book by any means. I ended up liking it a lot, and what happens is it translates poorly to a movie. I will say
I get the feeling, as a book, it's a kind of exciting, and it's kind of like a Harry Potter action version. Like, there's a lot happening in that movie, and Harry Potter's very active, but it doesn't, I mean, in the book, I'm sorry, but in the movie, it doesn't work so well, I guess, because I feel like nothing's happening that except for Harry Potter just playing these games over and over again.
Yeah.
Oh, now he's in stopping, go to, like, a ball and be a teenager. Now he's back to playing games. Oh, now here comes what's supposed to be the movie's about.
Which is why it translates poorly, because the Triwizard Tournament is not connected very well to the plot elements that are going on, mm-hmm. and they kind of had to include the tournament, so they chose to sort of ignore the plot.
Yes.
Anyway.
Okay, so, that's the worst one. Order of the Phoenix to me was kind of nice, Ryan. It was, I understood everything that was going on in the movie. Mm-hmm. The acting is kind of leveling out. The best part about it, you ask? Haircuts all around.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
There are a few problems with Order of the Phoenix, but overall, it's, I don't know, I feel kind of like, to be honest with you, Order of the Phoenix is entirely forgettable. It's not as memorable as the first two. It doesn't have anything stylish about it like the third one did. It's not bad like the fourth one. It's just kind of a movie in itself, and because that's mediocre, Order of the Phoenix for me was a 6. As someone who read the book, what do you have to say about Order of the Phoenix?
Well, I think that Order of the Phoenix is exactly what I wanted from the later Harry Potter movies. Now, it didn't have the impact that the first two had on me.
I think this is another new director, I think. David Yates,
yes.
Half-Blood Prince as well. Go ahead.
It's very good. And I think that the two important things to mention here are, one, what he chose to keep from the books was absolutely correct. It was enough of the plot to make sense. There were certain things that were compromised for the time, which were all totally, totally great. I'm not, you know, I like changes from the book as long as they make sense in the context of the movie, and they aren't arbitrary. And I thought that the visual style of this movie was excellent. The way he sort of weaves scenes together, especially the stuff where, you know, Harry's training with occlumency with Snape, so it's like we're weaving in and out of people's minds sometimes. You know, and then he really nicely used footage from the old movies to show how the actors have grown, which was really interesting. And I thought the plot or the story was pretty good, so I liked it a lot. Now I gave it a 7, and I know you're gonna say, but Ryan, you didn't like Prisoner of Azkaban, you gave it a 7. Well, Prisoner of Azkaban was a bigger disappointment, and also it was the first Michael Gambon, et cetera, et cetera. But
yeah. By that point, you're kind of used to all that. I guess you expect to be disappointed.
There's a lot of things I was disappointed in with Prisoner of Azkaban, but it still hangs together as a film, unlike, for example, Goblet of Fire. Like, you can follow what's going on in Azkaban. I took off a lot of points mostly for personal things like the choice of actor and because I didn't think – choice of actor, the style, and because I didn't think that they kept some stuff from the book that made it make more sense. But it still kind of made sense. It still made sense as a movie. You know, yeah. It's still okay. So it gets the 7. It's not low enough to be a 6. Well, this one gets a much higher 7 from me, but it's not high enough to be an 8. It didn't have the impact as the first two movies. Oh, well. People don't care about our rating system anyway. Go on.
Coming up on Half-Blood Prince, I'd say Yates is a good choice because he's a very safe director. He's not trying to do a Prisoner of Azkaban mm-hmm. type thing. He's not doing anything stylishly amazing. He's directing the movies. He's not even trying to be like Chris Columbus. Chris Columbus, you can look at and see his style and everything. He's only kind of doing them dark. There are scenes that are pretty well lit sometimes. I remember actually when I left the movie with someone who had actually seen it, they were like, okay, so what questions do you have? And it's funny because it got to that point where after... Prisoner and Goblet of Fire, like they expected to fill in the plot holes for me, right. You know? But no, I didn't have that word of thing. So it's kind of exciting to get back to like a plot that I completely understood and made great sense.
Yeah. And also, Order of the Phoenix has the best bad guy of the series. I think Umbridge is the best villain in all the Harry Potter books, better than Voldemort.
Ah. Yeah. And Black's death scene, I thought actually was well received in Phoenix as well. Mm-hmm. It was actually shocked me a bit. Unlike a death scene in a later Harry Potter movie. Mm-hmm. So Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, Ryan. You read the book. What'd you think? Rumor has it it's your least favorite Harry Potter book, yes?
Yes, it's my least favorite of the books. I don't think it's a bad book. I think all the books are pretty good. But it's my least favorite book because nothing happens. Nothing happens. Even less so than Goblet of Fire, for people who say that. But it's all about sort of Harry stumbles upon this book, and it's by the Half-Blood, or it's a property of the Half-Blood Prince, and the whole thing is him trying to figure out who the Half-Blood Prince is while simultaneously learning from Dumbledore more information on how they're going to kill Voldemort. But of course, it's all backstory type stuff. They don't kill Voldemort in this book, and when we find out who the Half-Blood Prince is, it doesn't really matter or have any effect on anything. So ultimately, it's kind of a waste. Although,
no, hold on, is that a book review? Or a movie.
Well, I'm getting to it.
Okay. I'm curious because this kind of ties into my problem with the movie.
That's a book review so far. Okay. Although I still really liked the book. I just think it's the weakest of the series. What I liked about the book was all the great backstory, because I always want to know more about these characters in a book I like, and so learning about basically it's a book entirely about Voldemort's life story, which isn't in the movie, which is kind of a weakness. But that's sort of the interesting part. Now, the movie made a valiant effort to make this interesting by cutting to the chase, which I think is a great idea. So it shows us a little bit of those Voldemort flashbacks, but only enough for us to get the right idea, introduces the idea of the Horcruxes, you know, moves the whole Voldemort stuff along, and really smartly re-edits the whole thing with Malfoy. Malfoy has this plot going on in the movie. He's trying to do something. In the books, it's hinted at, but annoyingly never explored until the end when it's all explained. In the movie, they're like, look, you're going to know it's Malfoy anyway. So they don't do much of a mystery about it, and they keep cutting back to show Malfoy doing things, which I think is a first in the movies, because I don't think we ever follow the perspective of anyone besides Harry in any other movie.
Oh, we really needed that in this movie, too, because he's been built up the other movies, and he actually kind of disappeared, like in Goblet of Fire.
Yeah.
And even Order of the Phoenix. So I was actually happy to see this was about him. And it's kind of funny you're telling me the book's really not that much, so much.
Yeah. But as much of an effort as it was, I would have to say that that it's still not that great, partly because the source material is the weakest, and partly because I felt that it was really uninterestingly directed. I thought, unlike Order of Phoenix, none of the shots were interesting. It was just like one shot of a character, two shot of a character,
yeah.
Wide shot of a character. And like sometimes people would be making impassioned speeches and wouldn't be on the frame. I thought the actors were directed worse than they had been in the past, and I mostly mean the adult actors, actually. And that leads me to Michael Gambon. This is a very Dumbledore-centric story, very Dumbledore-centric movie, because he's the one explaining everything. And Michael Gambon once again shows up and sort of ruins it for me. So, not bad, not great, 6.
I agree with you about Dumbledore once again. Mm. This is a very, very important Dumbledore film.
Yes.
And to be honest, I really didn't even care what happened with Dumbledore when it came down to it. I talked to plenty of people. We can cut this out if you need to. I talked to plenty of people who said they were, like, no matter what, they were ready to cry during this movie. And they were pretty much okay with it at the end. They were just like, eh. You mentioned that the scenery was kind of boring to you as far as what was going on and what he was actually like showing. I think the big problem there is that he doesn't really have anything new to show in this movie besides that cave set at the end, perhaps, mm-hmm. which was all computer. There's really nothing exciting. They're at Hogwarts pretty much the whole time. It's good to see him get back to the Quidditch match.
Yeah.
The acting's all completely leveled out, so the haircuts and the, you know, the wardrobe, all that during this film. I don't blame the director so much for having nothing interesting to direct. It just sounds to me like that's his source material.
Well, but hold on. I don't mean necessarily that there's no big set piece or something. Like, there's not a dragon fight in this book. I understand mm-hmm. that. But what I mean is, in a scene, in Order of the Phoenix, there are scenes of characters talking one-on-one in a study that are dynamically shot. And there are similar scenes in this movie where it's just like, I'm going to set the camera down and leave.
Okay. The one person I saw this with said they were bored. It didn't bore me so much. I see where you're coming from there, because that might have been one of the reasons they were bored.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said before, the Phoenix, I think he's just trying to be safe as a director, not do anything too distracting or take us away from everything.
Right.
You're right. I can't think of a single amazing shot or anything from this movie. There are some flaws of the acting. Dumbledore, like I said. Scenery. This harks back to, for me, though, having not read the book, I have, like, a couple major problems there. I guess, here's okay. An amazing set piece. Here you go, Ryan.
Yeah.
Was he's like, we have this great house. Let's burn it down and have, like, this wheat field around it.
Mm-hmm.
And that looked really good. Okay, yeah, he did a great job of that, sweeping through a wheat field, having them running through it and all sorts of stuff. Mm-hmm. But there was no reason for that to be in there. I couldn't figure out why it was in the end.
Yeah, I don't
recall
that.
It wasn't even really in the book.
No, it wasn't in the book, so... there's and also, other... like, you know... yeah, exactly. Why did they do that? What was the point?
Yeah, there's other big plot problems. I never understood why, in the end, Dumbledore was doing some things, why he was missing from a lot of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Which he tries to explain, but doesn't really make so much sense. Once again, someone's like, well, they explained that in the book. And then I kind of got Goblet of Fire feel with a lot of the hormones in this movie. Mainly, and for a movie that's based on a series written by a female, Ryan,
mm-hmm.
this movie reflected really bad on females, because every female in this movie is a complete idiot. we have Ginny, who's ready to like feed Harry Potter and tie his shoes at his every whim. We have yeah. Hermione, who PMSs every time Ron like remotely does anything that he shouldn't be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have one girl who's just so incredible. Like, she's like 90s Clueless stupid, Ryan.
But come on, that was a funny character, and that girl played it well.
It's a funny character, and it was funny maybe the first two times it happened in the movie, but after that it was so old, and I was really tired of it. I was like, okay, if he wants to cut the rundown, if he wants to cut the time down this movie and add in maybe some stuff I need to actually know, then cut some of that out, because in the end it doesn't really matter. Like, we know what's going to happen pretty much.
I got to tell you,
and the movie is like has hinted so much at what's happening with Ron and Hermione that, you know, I don't even feel like I'm ruining anything by mentioning that.
Yeah.
That I feel like that was just distracting. Like, he knew he had a funny character, so he's like, why don't I just milk this for all it's worth?
I gotta tell you, I agree with you to some extent, but the problem with the Ron and Hermione thing, I disagree, because even though it's like, okay, they should have gotten together two books ago, like, let's just get on with this. Even though that if they're trying to keep up with the books, that's basically what was happening in the books, and he actually cut a lot of the Ron stuff, and he also didn't have much more to cut too, because like I said, nothing happens in this book, so I wasn't upset with how he handled that. Also, the love potion thing plays into the plot. You know, he goes to talk to whatever,
well,
Slughorn, so...
You say two books ago, and I hope the books were better written than this, but it really seems now like Half-Blood Prince is the first movie made after all the books have been published. And it really seems like, okay, now we know where this is going. I'm like, I mean, this is really a series that we should have started after all the books have been made,
mm-hmm.
But we really know where this is going, so why don't we just cram everything that's important to the very last films? And Half-Blood Prince really seems like the first one. It's like, okay, we had to make sure everything's exactly in order for the last movie. With that in mind, I don't feel like anything really happens because of this. I don't feel like anything happens so much that in the first couple of films besides just meeting characters.
Well,
and that's another reason I don't think it matches up so well as the series. Like, I'm sure the books are completely different, and the books, you read Sorcerer's Stone, like, okay, she's got this plan, she knows where she's going.
Mm.
The movies are so, like, so safe about not doing that, that it doesn't work as a series of movies.
Yeah, I think that's a flaw. You're absolutely right. Circle back really quick on the thing you said about Ginny. Yes, the tying the shoes thing was absurd and that kind of thing, but
let me feed you a small pie.
Was funny when Ron sat down. I thought, like, pie?
Yeah, but pie. I mean, yeah, he could have done that without her feeding the pie to him. I mean,
yes, it is very weird. That is true. But in the what they should have done is written some wholesale new scenes. Actually, there's two things that are wrong. One, A lot of the Harry and Ginny like build up to the relationship in the book happens during the Quidditch stuff, which they decided to cut.
Yeah.
So that's part of it. The other thing is a lot of it happens completely in Harry's head. He just thinks about Ginny the whole book, and then finally at the end basically kisses her. So it's sort of like they didn't have any scenes to draw on for the movie. They should have just written some new ones, though.
Well, I agree. That's the, you know, that's the point of being like a screenwriter, and you may be adapting something, but you don't have to, you know, you can get creative with it, people.
Yeah, you're right.
As long as it makes sense. But my biggest problem overall is what I'm trying to say is big plot holes in this movie.
Now, what's the plot hole in this movie?
Basically what I said, I had no clue why that whole burning down Ron's
house. Well, it's not
really
a plot hole, just unnecessary.
Why that happened. Well, yeah, okay, it's kind of a problem. I don't understand why Dumbledore, where he knew to look for these different Horcruxes or whatever they're called.
Right, that's explained in the book, yeah.
That didn't make any sense at all. Besides those two big things, my biggest problem was just the hormones in this movie, too. Like, a lot of that I felt could have been deleted. And I would have liked the characters a lot more when it was all over with. And also, at the end of this one, I was once again really tired. I was like, okay, let's just stare off into the horizon and say and tell ourselves everything's going to be okay as long as we have each other.
Yeah, that is getting old. Books don't end that way.
They tried to do way too much of this movie, and at the same time, because of that, it came out kind of dead. It's still entirely watchable, much like the Harry Potter series. I really loved the stuff in the cave at the end. It was kind of getting back to some cool Harry Potter stuff. Mm-hmm. But overall, even the end itself, like, I didn't even care about what had happened to some major characters, and to be honest, I'm only going to see the last two movies now, you know, the last film, if you want to say that, based on the final book. I know where everything's going at this point, and I don't know. I feel like even if you didn't know so much, like, it's so heavy now. Like, they know, because they know what's happening, they're like, okay, here's all the important stuff you need to know for the next book.
Well,
for the next movie. I don't know.
It's funny you should mention that, because a big question I had at the end of this was how they're going to start the next movie. In the books, Dumbledore says, he's very specific about saying there are 7 Horcruxes. You found one in the second book. That was one. I found this ring over here. That's 2.
Over here, it was hiding in a corner. I don't know how.
Then there's the locket. It was supposed to be the third one, but as you can see, at the end, it was fake. So there's still the lockets out there. Then he goes off and lists. He's done a bunch of research. It makes sense in the book, and he explains what the other 5 Horcruxes or 4 Horcruxes are. And so then, at the beginning of the 7th book, Harry remembers what Dumbledore says. He's like, "All right, here's what we have to go find." That conversation doesn't happen in this movie, and I wonder how they're going to get that information to Harry. It seems like who else but Dumbledore would have known.
But see, Ryan, this is why they split into two movies. It's an obvious money grab. And they're like, okay, so how are we going to stretch this to 2 movies? Mm-hmm. So they'll probably write some new, like, 40-minute scene to explain that. Who cares?
Yeah, that's probably true. Probably he'll talk to his portrait or something.
Just because you mentioned the... just because you'd asked me about plot holes, I just thought of another one. Maybe this is explained better in the book, but the movie's called Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. Okay, so Harry Potter doesn't seem to care so much in the movie who the Half-Blood Prince is.
No, and they cut most of that out.
And then one of my favorite parts in, like, any movie of this kind is, at the very end, the character actually has the line, yes, I am the Half-Blood Prince. Uh-huh. No further explanation, nothing, like, no lead-up to that. It's just like, yep, it's me. And then the character just kind of walks off.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay, that's good to know, I guess, but why are you the Half-Blood Prince? What does that even mean? Like, we never really explained that either. And we're, you know, I don't...
And that's going to really make no sense in the context of the movies. I mean, I think it makes less sense than it should in the books, but it makes no sense in the movies.
Well, I had read, and I was kind of thinking that the Harry Potter series, like, when you have a series of 7 or 8 movies, I guess, like, it really kind of filters people out. And that's what... I feel like Half-Blood Prince is the first film that's pretty much just for the people who read the book. They've filtered everybody else out. They're like, okay, we're only really making these... for people who still care about Harry Potter. If you ever read the books, you probably stopped after Chamber of Secrets or Azkaban anyway. It only pseudo works. Like I said, it's watchable. So because of that, I gave it a 5. What'd you say you gave it, or have you yet?
A 6.
A 6, okay. So I guess we're pretty much just standard Logan and Ryan and all this.
Yep.
Which actually speaks pretty well for me not having read the books and you having read the books. We're kind of close in our ratings on this series.
Yeah, so I guess the books did not skew my judgment that much.
For me, it's just the biggest flaws in these movies is not knowing what's going on if you haven't read the books. But there it is, Ryan. At 45 minutes, there's the entire Harry Potter saga to date.
Well, that explains everything. And Logan, I know that I've never said this to you or acted this way at all, but arbitrarily, I want you to know that when I die, Maggie Smith is going to come in and say, just so you know, Logan.
Yes, yes.
She'll say, Ryan really thought of you as a son.
I feel like they're just trying to keep her like in the movie somehow. She's like, so you guys have something for me to say in the next movie, even?
They're like, we are paying her a lot of money to be in this, right?
Well, it's kind of like with Order of the Phoenix, Emma Thompson was almost not needed at all in that movie.
That's true.
But they're like, we need to have her because she was in, what, Azkaban was the last... Did we even see her in Goblet of Fire? I don't even think so.
Not that I recall.
Yeah, so I don't know.
No, yeah, I don't think so. Because the one, the premonition, like, scene where she's like, you're chosen and something.
Yeah,
that was the third one, right?
Yeah, the dude of Werewolf But yeah, that was pretty awesome, though. What can I say? Well, she's good. I mean, I look at her and I think Sorcerer's Stone, Chamber of Secrets, which is a good thing. You know, I look at Dumbledore and I'm like, wait, when did you join this series?
Right.
But yeah, Harry Potter. Those are our comments, closing comments, everything about Harry Potter, Ryan. Final thoughts?
Finally, I would say that my sister, after the first movie came out, had a great idea. I think this will eventually happen, although it won't be for years and years and years. The BBC should do a mini-series of Harry Potter.
We've actually discussed this before. It's not going to happen, because, I mean, no one will ever top Daniel Radcliffe, to be honest with you.
Well,
but he is Harry Potter. People will constantly think of him as Harry Potter, no matter who else they cast.
Harry Potter as a character, Harry Potter's like Lord of the Rings, like, Harry Potter will be around in 20 years, and they'll redo it. Don't worry about that.
You think so? Like an animated form? It'll go like reverse Lord of the Rings?
It might do that.
Yeah.
But my point is, they will do it again, and they should do it as a miniseries where they can spend the time and put, not necessarily everything, but put more of what was in the books and sort of get more of what I like about the books in there. I mean, the first two books were short enough that the first two movies are pretty representative of them. But the stuff I like about the books is all this intricate, like, this world building. It's like, it's this intricate world that is created that all these characters have a little bit of a meaning and a little bit of a plot, and they don't feel like they're two-dimensional, and, you know, the movie doesn't always have that.
Yeah, it's true. I have a hard time trying to live in the real world, Ryan.
Oh, man, not me. I try to not live in the real world.
I don't need this nerdy world-building things. It's like, let's make, like, Sim City here. Is that kind of what you're talking
about?
That's
what I mean.
Okay, yes, I thought. Well, if you're into this sort of thing, Ryan and I do things like this all the time over at critical-in.com. By that, we just talk about movies.
Oh.
TV, we talk about TV every now and then.
Yeah, we do.
I think one time I talked about a cat.
Yes. Awesome. I don't remember that being useful, but all right.
My cat was cute that morning when I woke
recall.
Up.
Right.
That cat's dead now. And then, so if you're in that, go there. I think we have a winner for the contest, which will be announced next week. Speaking of next week, I'll go and announce this. Hey, if you always liked, you know, some of the early shows, Ryan, we were like, hey, an awesome horror movie came out this week. Let's just see that. And if it's terrible, it's fun. If it's good, it's fun.
I remember us in our freewheeling days.
That's kind of what we're into. So we got another horror movie coming up for you next week. It'll be fun. Stick around, kids. It gets better.
All right. I'm excited.
But there, I feel like this is like a good place to go now for Harry Potter information right here. If you want some good reviews of the Harry Potter films, listen to this.
Everything, if you do, go back in time 45 minutes and listen to this.
I made sure to say that, to plug this in the end. So, yeah, this was a great episode, Ryan.
All right. Plugging this in the end, I'm Ryan.
And I'm Logan.
Good night.
Music by Kevin MacLeod.